Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
High noon in the District of Columbia, and it's time to get to the Rude Guest Hotline. Excited to talk to our friend Mark Zuckerman from Masson Sports. Zuck, I imagine it was a fun weekend. Sweep at Camden Yards, one of the best parks. Great weather. I mean, I think it was good weather. How much did the Nats need the three-game sweep over the Orioles?
Yeah, well, JP, it was a fun weekend for anybody who was affiliated with the Nationals. Sure, most of the people at Camden Yards were not enjoying that this weekend because of what was going on with the home team. But, you know, they needed it. It was like this perfect alignment of the stars that a struggling team faced an even more struggling team that hit rock bottom and took advantage of it. And while, you know, nobody feels good about what's happening with the Orioles, if you're the Nationals, you have to be able to do what they did. You take care of business against a team that's down that hard at that point, and they did it emphatically. You know, when you're up 7-0, two innings in back-to-back days, you're doing something right. They needed that. Now the question is, can they keep it going? Because the competition's going to get a whole lot stiffer here this week with the Braves and the Giants coming to town.
Obviously, I want to keep talking about the Nats, but are you surprised just at how poorly it's going for the Orioles?
Yeah, I think everyone is. I don't think anybody could have foreseen it being this bad. Maybe you thought, okay, they could take a step back, and maybe they didn't make the moves this winter that a lot of people hoped they would to bolster that roster. But, I mean, they've got, I think, the fourth worst record in the league and in the majors right now. That's pretty shocking. I don't think anybody saw it falling apart to that extent. But it's a bad situation, and it's funny. They were in D.C. late last month, and in talking to their people who cover the team, there was already concern then, and some of them saying, like, I don't know if they're going to get out of this thing. And I was like, come on, it's too early. They're going to be fine. No, they definitely sensed it. There was something wrong there, and, yeah, it's performance, but it seems like also within the clubhouse it just has not been a great situation, and a lot of fingers being pointed at this idea of that they didn't go and bring in outside experienced veterans who not only could help them on the field, but help those young guys within the clubhouse. A lot of these kids are struggling for the first time, and they don't have anybody to turn to kind of help them get through it. To make the comparison to the Nats, like, who is their Jason Worth right now?
Yeah.
To kind of is that proven winner who's helping the rest of them get through all this, and it seems like they don't have that.
That's a great reminder of Worth's value here. Talking with Mark Zuckerman, you can watch his work on Masson Sports. You can give him a follow at Mark Zuckerman. MassonSports.com is where all of his written stuff is, and then you can check out the Nats Chat podcast. So like you said, the Nats go up to Baltimore, get the series sweep, then it's going to get hard again. The Braves just took 2 out of 3 from them. They've got the Braves coming to town tomorrow night for a three-game set. Then it's the Giants for the weekend. I imagine those Giants games will be big. This seems like it'll be a big crowd week at Nats Park with, the Braves fans, obviously, and then Giants fans, too. Are they expecting full, maybe even sellouts for these?
Yeah, I haven't heard numbers or anything, but I would imagine a weekend series against the Giants, Memorial Day weekend, and I think good weather from last I checked, that should do well for them. And, you know, there's been this thing this year where they've actually, I feel like, done better against some of the better competition. It's almost like they're rising to the occasion as opposed to playing the lesser teams. So maybe playing in front of 30, 35,000, a lot this week could be good for them and kind of give a boost to the young guys. But I mean, it's an important week. And I'm not saying they got to go out and, you know, win 4 out of 6 or anything like that, as great as that would be. But just to show that what we just saw this weekend, especially from an offensive standpoint, that just wasn't a one-off, that it wasn't just a case of playing the Orioles, that there could actually be something there. I mean, they hit 5 home runs yesterday, something they hadn't done since the end of the 2023 season. They scored early. They scored often. This has been a real point of emphasis from Davey Martinez. Get to the opposing starter, play from out in front, because it makes such a difference for your own pitcher. You're not feeling like you're chasing them the whole way. I mean, they've done a good job of rallying late and often pulling it off in the seventh, eighth, ninth innings, but it's hard to do that every night. It makes it such a difference when you're playing out in front, even if it's only, you know, a run or two. It doesn't have to be seven. So let's see if they can continue that this week and try to set the tone a little early.
Yeah, sure. I think it's going to be really interesting to see if they can use the Nats can use the series sweep to kind of reset, because they're playing pretty good baseball, and then they went on that eight game losing streak, right? And
yeah,
that just kind of, when you lose eight in a row like that, it just takes off the positive momentum in a major way. So what is kind of the key, especially with Atlanta playing a lot better, to putting some W's up in that series before the Giants get here?
Well, yeah, so what you saw in that Braves series when they faced them in Atlanta last week, and they lost 3 out of 4, was this same thing I was just talking about, where they are not scoring runs until late in the games. They went through 8 straight games where they did not score more than 2 runs off an opposing starter on any given night. You just can't do that. Now, again, you don't have to score 7, but you got to try to put something together and put together quality at bats early in games. And when you get a chance with runners in scoring position, it just takes one hit to convert that. And it just changes the tenor, I think, of the whole game. So you start with that. And then to finish it, and I know the bullpen has been the number one problem area for them this season, but kind of quietly, that group has gotten stabilized here in the last, I don't know, week to 2 weeks. And while it may not be a world beater in the best bullpen in baseball or anything like that, they are giving them a chance most of the time. And in these games that they're winning, it's usually on the strength of, you know, multiple scoreless innings from the bullpen. So if you can score a couple runs early, you know your starting pitching has been solid. And now you get to the seventh and you've got a 2-run lead, something like that. I think they're better positioned to close out those kind of games than they were earlier in the year, when, you know, you're just holding your breath every time Davey signals out there to bring somebody in, believing that the odds of them actually pulling it off were pretty slim.
Certainly. Talking with our friend Mark Zuckerman here on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude makes the most reliable HVAC products in the DMV. Give Zuck a follow at Mark Zuckerman, Zuckerman. I was at an event last week, Mark, where I got to meet James Wood's father. I believe I've met him before, but what a pleasant guy he is. And it one thing that stands out to me is, you know, James seems so quiet and reserved, but his father was like a gregarious, like, interesting fellow. How is he doing kind of, I mean, for a lot of these guys, they got called up and they've been in the bigs, but this is their first year, like, doing it for a full season. We're now, I don't know, I mean, mid-May, we're fully into the baseball season now. This isn't the first week, the first month, any of that. How do you think they're, like, acclimating, starting with Wood? Obviously,
yeah,
he's hitting
well. Yeah, well, first of all, Kenny Wood is a delight. He's a former basketball star in Richmond. So, I mean, he knows, you know, the spotlight, and, you know, they raised James really well. He's such a polite kid and maybe doesn't have the big personality, but he is an intense competitor when he's out there on the field. What we've seen from him so far is a 22-year-old with still less than a full year in the big leagues who has the approach at the plate of a seasoned veteran. He takes his walks. He doesn't chase that much. And he hits the ball, I mean, he hits the ball as hard as almost anybody in the sport, but he hits it hard to the opposite field. All but a couple of his home runs are to left field, left center field. That's his natural swing to do that. I mean, there are very few players in baseball who have that kind of approach. And one of the few that I can think of, and it's a valid comp right now, is Juan Soto. So for James Wood to be in that conversation at 22, to have a similar kind of approach and patience at the plate and ability to hit the ball hard like that, it shows you how the sky's the limit. And what James has that Juan maybe didn't really have is that he also runs the bases extremely well. And so he's like a serious threat to have a 30-30 season, or maybe if he keeps it up, maybe even an outside shot at 40-40. That's a remarkable thing for a guy who's 6'7". He's got the full package.
It's crazy to watch him. I saw him, this is probably a couple of weeks back, but the way your brain is, you might know exactly what I'm talking about. He hit a ball that looked like a double play. Like, it looked like a double play all day. And shortstop gets the second, and then Wood beat out the throw. And he got bobbled a little bit, but it was one of those things where I'm watching this kid because he's getting hit for power, and I want to watch every at-bat. But all the little stuff is done really well, I think, as a hitter and as a runner, and it's really encouraging. The other, like, kind of the Nats are promoting this trio of youngs. Maybe it's four. Abrams playing great also. I know you had an article on Massive Sports about kind of the start to the season CJ's had.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, we know last year he had a great first half. He's an all-star. It looks like this is his big breakthrough. And then he struggled bad in the second half of the season. I'm just talking about on the field at this point.
Right.
And then you get to the end of September, and he ends up being demoted for the final week of the season, not for his on-field performance, but for his off-the-field stuff and getting caught out of the casino in Chicago early in the morning. So there was pressure on him coming into this year. I thought it was kind of the number one question mark and maybe the biggest issue facing the team is, how is he going to bounce back from this, both the on-field performance and just how does he conduct himself? And from day one of spring training, he has done everything that you could want him to do. He's been, you know, great, and as far as we know, not getting into any kind of trouble. But beyond that, he is playing at that all-star level again in all parts of his game. That's really important. He is supposed to be one of the faces of this rebuild. And you can see that he is, again, hitting for power, running the bases well, playing a good shortstop. In that game yesterday, he hits two homers. He hits the very first pitch of the game for a home run off Zach Eflin, just like silencing the crowd immediately. So you set the tone with that. He hits another one his next time up. It's the second inning. But I think he was most excited, to be honest, about the final play of the game, a tremendous double play that he started and Luis Garcia turned to end the game. He was as fired up about that as anything. And I think it's, there's a little metaphor in there that I wrote about today, that the start of the game, yeah, that's great, just like the start of the season is great. But his number one goal this year is not how he starts it, how he finishes it, because he knows last year did not end well. So to end the game spectacularly, I think he's thinking in those same terms about how he wants this whole season to play out. He wants people to remember how he ends it, not just how he starts it.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
If you want to read Mark's article, I just retweeted that. C.J. Abrams started yesterday's game with a bang, but the spectacular play he made to end the game speaks to the larger story about 2025. I think it's really well done, really well written. You can check it out at Massive Sports, or you can follow Mark at Mark Zuckerman, joining us via the Rude Guest Hotline. So I've heard the highlight now like four times because our guys have been playing it in the updates. Cruz obviously had the big bop yesterday. Where are we at with Dylan? Because I think for this team to really matter going forward, I think a number of things have to change and they got to spend more money. But I think you need Cruz to be in this Abrams Wood discussion about potential all-star players.
Yeah, he's supposed to be part of this in a big way, of course. When you have the number two pick in the draft and use it on him, and he probably would have been the number one pick if not for his LSU teammate Paul Skeens, there's a certain standard that you're expecting from him. Now, he hasn't met it yet, at least offensively, and he's still got to find some plate discipline, recognition of pitches. I mean, he chases a lot of slop off the plate, and that's something he's going to have to figure out because teams know it, and they're giving him a lot of that stuff. They don't give him a lot of fastballs to hit. So that's a big step for him. Now, I mean, he crushed it yesterday, three-run homer. He has moments. You can see it's in there. It's just a matter of finding some consistency. But as I've said to others, the thing that stands out that impresses me most about him is, in spite of the offensive struggles, he he has played a tremendous outfield, whether in right or in center, because he's played a decent amount of center as well. He's one of their best base runners, one of the most efficient and, at base stealing. And he's such a mature kid that, again, at such a young age, hasn't even been in the big leagues for a full year. To be able to separate those parts of your game, to not take your offensive struggles out in the field with you, that's the kind of stuff that even veterans don't often do very well. So I think that bodes well for him. Now, yeah, he's still got to, perfect the art of hitting big league pitching, and that's a lot of work, and there's no guarantee it's going to happen. But the other parts of his game, he's still contributing to them in meaningful ways, even if he's not delivering at the plate the way they would hope he would.
Landfill is our producer, and he's a notorious hater. I want to preface this by saying that. Landfill thinks Cruz might be better served if he was in AAA, like learning better pitching. I can't imagine he's the only person that thinks that. I do not. I like that they're like, nope, he's in the bigs. He's in the bigs for good. But he is hitting 190. Is that at all a conversation? I mean, O's had to do that with Holiday, I think.
Right. And so I don't sense that it's a serious conversation yet, but doesn't mean that it can't get there. And this is why, look, last year everybody was screaming, hey, why are you calling up James Wood? He's tearing it up at AAA. When are you going to call up Dylan Cruz? And they waited with Wood in particular until July. And whether that had anything to do with it or not, I mean, he has looked ready for the big leagues ever since he got here, and maybe that little extra time paid off. Did they rush Cruz? He didn't have dominant numbers at AAA. But, again, they knew he came from a big-time college program, very mature, and they felt like, hey, we want to show everyone we're ready to take that next step. Here's the new young core of the Nationals, and Cruz is such a big part of it. And what they said coming into this year was they didn't want him looking over his shoulder. They didn't want him thinking about, well, if I struggle for a few weeks, I could go back down. And Mike Rizzo hates sending down a prospect. When he calls him up, he sometimes will wait to call a guy up, but his attitude is, when I call him up, I want to know that he's going to stay here forever and never have to go back down again. So the mindset with Cruz was, hey, don't worry about any of this. You're getting your 600 at-bats in the big leagues no matter what this year. And maybe if the team's struggling, that kind of helps allow them to do that, and it's not like life or death costing them games in a pennant race. But at some point, you do have to actually perform, and if it becomes obvious that he's not getting it done at this level and needs to work on specific things, you may have to make that move. I don't think they're there yet. Let's check back in a few weeks or a month and see if there's some progress. But it's not out of the question to at least consider that possibility. I will say that.
I think you're right. Like, if he's not, if he still is hitting like this, and we get to July or something, at some point you don't want to break a kid's confidence either. I want to zoom out a hair, Zuck, and just kind of look at MLB across the country. Cubs are playing really good baseball. Did we expect that?
They had some expectations. Kind of went through the rebuild similar to the Nats and have a better young core now. And they did go and do some things this offseason that the Nats did not do. And so there was some optimism. I don't know if it was quite this much. But I think good on them for recognizing that the NL Central was kind of wide open, that the Cardinals were taking a step back and kind of trying to rebuild themselves. So that was, I think, a calculated move on their part, and so far it's paid off. And, I think it's good for baseball when the Cubs are good,
right,
for one thing. But you look at the National League as a whole, there's like seven or eight teams that look really good right now. Four out of the five in the West. It's not just the Dodgers.
The Padres are awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that is a real competitive division. And then, in the East, with what the Mets did, they've lived up to what they're supposed to be. The Phillies are right there with them. And the Braves, after a really rough start, seem to have gotten it back together now. That's, three in the East, four in the West, at least one in the Central. That's like eight teams. There's only going to be room for six in the end to make the playoffs. That wild card race could be pretty fascinating when it comes down to it, because it may not be that year where, hey, if you hang around 500, you're in the race. You might need to be approaching 90, even the topping 90 wins to get in this year.
Dude, right now there's 10 teams 500 or better in the NL, which is crazy. Now, some of that, I honestly think, is because the Rockies are so god-awful that everybody's beating their ass. The Rockies are 8-38. Is that the worst team you've ever seen?
It's embarrassing. Yeah, I mean, I saw the White Sox last year when they set the record with over 120 losses, and we saw the Rockies last month, and they did take one out of three from the Nats, but that looks like a hopeless situation. And, you know, it's one thing to lose a whole lot of games, and at least you have a plan in place. Say, okay, we're going young. We're going to take our lumps now, but we feel like it's going to pay off in a couple of years. I'm not sure the Rockies have that plan. Nobody's entirely sure what they're doing. They had that bizarre offseason a couple winters ago. They trade Nolan Arenado and eat a lot of the money to the Cardinals, even though he's in the prime of his career, and then turn around and sign Chris Bryant to replace him. And Bryant's been hurt almost the whole time, hasn't done anything to them, costing them a ton of money. It's always tough to pitch in Colorado, so they've never quite figured out how do you win with pitching. It's pretty ugly, and yet they draw well at Coors Field. It's a beautiful ballpark. The weather's usually really nice. And I just wonder if ownership looks at it and says, well, who cares if we're not winning, if we're making money because we get $30,000 a game. That's a tough spot to be in, but that is really ugly there. And Bud Black, who's a good, well-respected manager and survived there for quite a while, it wasn't his fault. He's probably relieved, to be honest, that he was fired early on in the year because – he doesn't deserve to have to go through what they're going through this year.
Yeah, I mean, that is a remarkably bad record through 45 games or whatever. Mark, thank you very much for the time, dude. I appreciate it.
All right, take care, JP.
We'll be watching tomorrow night. That's Mark Zuckerman. Check him out at massinsports.com. Check out the Nats Chat podcast or give him a follow at Mark Zuckerman, Z-U-C-K-E-R-M-A-N. Great reporter. Been on the Nats beat, I believe, from day one. Levon Hernandez throwing out the first pitch at RFK and is also just a great dude. Nobody go anywhere. We're checking in on the Tush Push.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.